Funding for this talk comes from TrialX, connecting patients to clinical trials.
Good evening and welcome to Cure Talks. I'm Shweta Mishra, your host, joining you from India. And today we are talking all about endometriosis with our eminent guests and the founders of Worldwide Endometriosis March and Endometriosis Day, Dr. Kamran Nizad and Dr. Azadeh Nizad. Endometriosis is a disease where cells of internal lining of the uterus starts to grow outside the uterus, causing a maze of symptoms, including not only pelvic pain, infertility, and severe menstrual cramps, but many more. It affects more than 200 million women worldwide, and it affects every woman differently. Unfortunately, many women remain undiagnosed or are diagnosed late due to lack of understanding of the symptoms. Despite this, there is lack of research funding for diagnosis, cause, and treatments of endometriosis. March is Endometriosis Awareness Month, and the 5th Worldwide Endometriosis March just took place on 24th of March 2018 in 60-plus countries this year to gain the attention of health policymakers towards this issue. Today, Dr. Kamran Nizad and Dr. Azadeh Nizad will tell us all about the focus of the Endo March and educate us about latest advances in endometriosis diagnosis and treatment. Dr. Kamran Nizad has been called the father of modern-day surgery for pioneering the field of video-assisted endoscopy. He has been the first to perform many of the most advanced laparoscopic surgical procedures. He is considered as one of the best endometriosis specialists in California, an author of several books and publications, and recipient of numerous awards. He has been involved in research, teaching, innovating, and philanthropic activities throughout life. Dr. Azadeh Nizad is the co-director of the Center for Special, Minimally Invasive, and Robotic Surgery and performs surgery at the Stanford University Medical Center. Her special interest is myoma of the uterus and effects of endometriosis in young girls. I welcome you to Cure Talks, Dr. Kamran Nizad and Dr. Azadeh Nizad. And my co-host for today's show is Joni Cox-Henry. Joni is a journalist and endo warrior battling endometriosis for more than a decade now and has lost an ovary to the disease. She writes for the Endometriosis Foundation of America's blog, The Blossom, and educates others on this disease. On the panel, we also have Claire Watson, who is joining us from Scotland, where she attended the Endo March on 24th there. Claire is an endometriosis survivor and is passionate about spreading awareness. Claire started the Endometriosis 5 support group as a way to help other women and has won Volunteer of the Year award twice last year for her work on endometriosis. And this year, she's been asked to go to the Queen's Garden Party because of her work on endometriosis. Claire was diagnosed with endometriosis at the age of 31 and after being misdiagnosed for almost 16 years, only to undergo full hysterectomy at the age of 33. We also had Samantha Evias on the panel, but she's unable to join the call due to some clash in her schedules. But she has sent in her questions for the experts, which I'll be asking on her behalf. I extend a warm welcome to all my listeners, and I would like to remind our listeners that we will be discussing questions sent in via email at the end of the talk. So send in your questions to shweta@trialx.com. And if you want to ask a question live, please press 1 on your keypads, and we'll bring you on air to ask them. You can also post your questions on qtalks.com. With this, I will begin with you, Dr. Kamran Nizad. The Worldwide Endometriosis March just happened on the 24th of this month in over 60-plus countries. That is a huge support you have from the endometriosis community. For the benefit of our audience, could you please elaborate what is the focus of the Worldwide Endometriosis March and why do you think such a big, huge movement is required for this disease?
Well, thank you very much. As I was mentioning before, and most probably you did not hear, I wanted to thank you, the organizers, and all the participants in this talk, and also people, all the listeners on this program around the world for their kind interest and attention to the matter of endometriosis. The reason that we founded and we started Endometriosis March, which has been a significant achievement in raising awareness for endometriosis around the world is as follows. Myself and my brothers, Dr. Far Nejad, Dr. Sina Nejad, and my niece, Dr. Alzadeh Nejad, combined together, we had been taking care of and treating young girls and women with endometriosis. All of us, if you combine it together, for more than 100 years. And like any other family, when we get together for different holidays or vacations, because we are all physicians and we take care of young girls and women with endometriosis, invariably we talk about endometriosis at all of our meetings or talks. And we notice that over all of these years, still we see patients coming to us and they have been delayed in diagnosis in average of 6 to 8 years. And still, despite where we practice in some of the most advanced cities in the world. We practice in a very urban area, very highly educated physicians all around the world, and still we see patients come to us and their diagnosis has been delayed many years, or they had to go from this doctor to that doctor, and they said, well, it's no problem, all of your tests are normal, all of your imaging, ultrasound, MRI, everything is normal. So probably this is not anything significant. Probably it is in your head. Perhaps you are depressed, or it doesn't exist. And this was happening over and over. Or they say, well, perhaps you have pelvic inflammatory disease, and these are people that they even haven't had any kind of intimacy to get pelvic inflammatory disease. So this was upsetting to us to see why all of this. Why does it take? Why even medical professionals sometimes it is not in their radar to diagnose endometriosis? So when we were talking together, and we finally decided that perhaps instead of writing about it more and more as we have been, because again, between all four of us together, we have been probably one of the most published area about endometriosis with several hundred articles about it, many books and book chapters about it. Then we decided perhaps if we want to do real something, we should empower young girls and women themselves. The same way that significant marches for civil rights movement, as you can see, for other significant movements, Susan B. Coleman Foundation for Endometriosis, for breast cancer, all of these movements, people, they decided to take the matters in their own hand. We decided to empower young girls and women and their families with endometriosis. And I have been talking about it for many years, almost 10 years. And 5 years ago, we started Worldwide Endometriosis March and Worldwide Endometriosis Day. And as you can see, it was a brush fire. Suddenly, all the organizations around the world, more than 63 countries around the world, they have joined this movement, and marches around the world are happening. And the goal of this march was to raise awareness, number one, to raise awareness around the world about endometriosis, and we are achieving this goal more and more. Another goal of the march was to find and encourage all the universities, all the establishments, all the companies to come up with a non-invasive diagnostic test for endometriosis, because at the present time, the only way to diagnose endometriosis is by doing a laparoscopy. So we wanted to raise to find a non-invasive diagnostic test. And also the other missions are hopefully to find a cure and find, or ultimately a method to prevent it. Incidentally, I would be the person answering all of your questions. Dr. Azadeh Nejad had to apologize. He had to go and attend to another patient, and because he thought this is not going to be working. So anyway, now this is in short the summary why we started Worldwide Endometriosis March.
Okay, thank you so much for your answer, Dr. Cameron Nizad. With this, I will just hand over to Joni, our co-host for today's talk, and she will take the discussion further with you. Joni, you are on air.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Hi. This question is for it's for Dr. Cameron Nizad. What is the best treatment for managing monthly endometriosis pain if a woman wishes to preserve her fertility?
Well, any patient who wants to have managed for endometriosis depends what they are in the case that because they want to manage and they want to get pregnant, we have to address it in two ways. If they're actually trying to get pregnant right now, there's one group of patients, or the other group are those are who are younger patients, the patient that they want to preserve the fertility and they have pain. So if the patient has pain and she wants to get pregnant at the right at this present time, obviously has to be evaluated very thoroughly and encourage her and manage her for infertility to see, time her ovulation, help her to see, to get pregnant if her fallopian tubes are normal, if her husband's sperm count is normal, and depending to how old they are, we time the ovulation, we encourage them intercourse at the right time, at the time of ovulation. Or also perhaps in some cases we might have to do intrauterine insemination if the fallopian tubes are normal. If the fallopian tubes are not normal by hysterosalpingogram, then she might further evaluation and she might require surgery to treat her endometriosis. If she is very, very young, that means the patient that are under the ages of 37, and if the husband's sperm count is good, if they have pain, the best treatment is to treat them by an expert surgeon to treat the endometriosis very thoroughly, remove it as much as possible, and then try to get pregnant in their own. If they have a lot of pain and are more than 37 years of age, and also there are some problems with the sperm, and they have not responded to other treatments, still they can be treated very thoroughly by an expert endometriosis specialist, and then at that time proceed with IVF or other assisted reproductive technology treatment. And if the woman is very young, she wants to conserve her reproductive system, we try to manage her as much as possible without any surgery, with other methods of treatment. If she doesn't respond to other methods like birth control pills or others, she should be evaluated by an expert endometriosis by laparoscopy and treated very thoroughly for her endometriosis, and at that time is very different options available.
Excellent. And why does adenomyosis go hand in hand typically with endometriosis?
That is a very nice question. A lot of times, a lot of the patients that they have endometriosis, a significant portion of them, they have endometriosis of the uterus, that is called adenomyosis. And those adenomyosis patients, they have to be treated also for the treatment of their for their pain and also for their bleeding. And also, again, it depends if they want to get pregnant and if they don't want to get pregnant. People who do not want to get pregnant, the best treatment for pregnancy, the best treatment for endometriosis is at the present time having no period. That could be we have to be very cautious and careful how to manage these patients. There is not one size fits all. It has to be every treatment, every patient, the treatment has to be tailored for that patient. There is not only one hormone. There is not one birth control pill or one progesterone or one RUD or one GnRH analog or antagonist that has to be used for this patient. The treatment should be tailored for that patient. Patient with endometriosis, they should see an endometriosis specialist who knows how to manage this patient, especially when there is adenomyosis involved for this patient. That is the answer.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Claire Watson, are you online?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, hi there. Go ahead
hi.
And ask your questions to Doctor.
Hi. I'm phoning from the UK, and what I'm wondering is why is there such a long delay in getting diagnosed? And it has came down from 10.5 years, but we're still sitting at 7.5, which is still a very long time.
I was thanking Claire and Joni for their questions on my behalf and also on behalf of Dr. Azad and Nejat, who had to attend another matter. So the reason for delay, Claire, is because there is not enough awareness even in the medical communities. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, young girls and women around the world have been suffering for thousands of years because of lack of understanding about endometriosis, because what mind doesn't know, eyes don't see. The majority of medical professionals, they are looking for imaging studies, they are relying on an ultrasound or an MRI to show them endometriosis. And none of them are accurate for endometriosis. Mm-hmm. And it is not on their radar, because the only way to diagnose endometriosis at the present time is by laparoscopy. And you cannot expose everybody to laparoscopy, but at the same time, even sometimes these patients are not even offered a laparoscopy because it is not on the radar of the physician that the patient goes to. A lot of these young girls and women, they still go to their pediatrician, and a lot of the pediatricians, endometriosis is not in their differential diagnosis. A lot of internists, endometriosis is not in their differential diagnosis. And at the same time, when it goes to a lot of gynecologists, when they might think of endometriosis, they are not very well versed about it. I have been, and also many of my colleagues, I have been also, my brothers and my niece, we have been practicing, as I mentioned, for more than 100 years together. And we have trained, and we are training some of the physicians, some of the gynecologists coming to us from some of the best centers around the world. When they come to us, the first 5 or 6 months, when we show them what is endometriosis, they don't, and we prove to them, when we excise the disease, when we remove the disease, we send it to the pathologist and we prove it to them, this is endometriosis. At the very beginning, it is mind-boggling for them that after many years of medical school and many years of training in obstetrics and gynecology, they know what endometriosis looks like. That means a lot of the centers, teaching centers, some of the best programs in the world, they still don't, the teachers don't know what endometriosis looks like anyway. So what mind doesn't know, eyes don't see. That is the answer to your very good question. Why does it take 6, 7, 8 to 10 years to diagnose the disease? Is because the physicians, they don't know what to look for. That is the answer to your question.
Okay, thank you. That also leads me on to another question, that in the future, is it possible that endometriosis can be diagnosed through a blood test? And how far away is this likely from happening?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand your question again. What was it?
If endometriosis, if it would be possible for it to be tested by taking a blood sample?
Oh, there is not at the present time any blood test or any definite test that right now we can say diagnose endometriosis without laparoscopy. There are some tests could be suggestive, like there are some new endometrial biopsy tests that it does show that the patient has some inflammation, and that inflammation, one of them could be because of endometriosis. So I know, you know, endometriosis, there is no definite test or blood test at the present time for it. Also, I know you had a question here written that why is it dangerous to use electrosurgical instruments? How can we carefully use instruments to precisely excise the treatment? What is better, radiofrequency, electrosurgery, laser, plasma energy? The answer to that question is not the instrument, electrocautery, plasma energy, lasers, scissors, what is the robot, what is the best. The answer to that question is none of them are the best. The best is the right surgeon. The correct, the surgeon who is experienced can do the surgery with toothpicks. And the best and the most expensive instruments in the hands of the inexperienced surgeon could be dangerous. So, but in general, laser damages the tissue much, much less than electroenergy or electrocautery, because physics are physics. The penetration of the laser is 150 microns. The penetration of the electrocautery and electrosurgical instrument is 7,500 microns. So, you know, the difference between 150 microns to 7,500 microns of electrosurgery is a lot more damage. So electroenergy, mm-hmm. electrosurgical instrument, electricity could be much, much more damaging than a laser. A laser mm-hmm. is only 150 microns. So you are a very experienced surgeon, can do a very, very precise excision of the endometriosis with a laser rather than electrocautery that could be more damaging. Mm-hmm. And one other question is, can you avoid, you had a question here, Claire.
Yes. Can you avoid?
The question was, can we avoid laparotomy, large
yeah.
incision, open surgery, even for severe stage 4 multi-organ endometriosis? That was
yeah.
another question of yours, Claire. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Right. That question that you had, Claire, and you have sent it to me in advance before, and I thank you for that. Absolutely, of course, multi-organ stage 4 endometriosis could be managed properly by minimally invasive surgery, by video-assisted laparoscopic surgery or thoracoscopic surgery, definitely, because the limiting factor is a skill and experience of the surgeon and the availability of proper instrumentation. We reported multi-organ laparoscopic treatment of a stage 4 endometriosis, severe disease, as early as 1985, and we have reported it and published it as early as 1986, 87, 88 for endometriosis of the bowel. So all of this could be managed by laparoscope. As I mentioned again, the limiting uh-huh. factor is the skill and experience of the surgeon and the availability and availability of proper instrumentation.
Uh-huh. Thank you very much.
Joni, you have other questions for the doc?
Yes, I did. I had another question. For women who have already had children with endometriosis and are not interested in preserving fertility, is a hysterectomy typically the best choice?
You know, thank you very much, Joni, for asking your question. Women who already have had children, they have completed their families, and they continue to have pain, they have to be evaluated very thoroughly. We cannot have one size fits all. If there is a young woman in her 20s or early 30s and she has pain, we have to evaluate her to see why she has pain. If she doesn't have heavy periods, if she doesn't have adenomyosis, that means endometriosis in her uterus, and her uterus is completely healthy, she might not need to have hysterectomy. All she needs to do, she needs to have her endometriosis of other areas, like she has endometriosis on her ovaries, she might have endometriosis on her nerves, on her uterosacral ligaments, on her other nerves, which causes a lot of pain. She doesn't, if the woman has nothing wrong with her uterus, she doesn't need to have her uterus removed. First, we should try other methods to treat the endometriosis before we jump on hysterectomy. But On the other hand, if she has a lot of disease involving her uterus, and she has tried everything else, removal of her uterus is going to be the only option, and everything else has failed, yes, that might be the reason. That might be the only option if everything else has failed. I hope I answered your question.
Yes, you did. Thank you so much. And I was curious, have you found any links between alcohol and endometriosis and diet and endometriosis?
You know, endometriosis is an enigmatic disease. It is a very, very common. It has been said that there is 1 out of 10 women have endometriosis. Actually, you know, sometimes it could be even more common. So, and behaves very, very differently. Endometriosis, sometimes a small amount of endometriosis causes a significant amount of pain. Sometimes a lot of endometriosis causes no pain. We don't know what it is related to. We don't know if it is related to genetics. It is related to food. It is related to environment. We know that probably half of these patients, some genetic factors might be involved. In about 50% of our patients might be some genetics, some genes related, but not in all of them. In some occasions, you might see environment could have some involvement, environmental hazards, toxins, environmental pesticides, some of them could have a factor. Sometimes some of the foods might be related. You know, endometriosis is so common that you can relate it to almost anything, to coffee, to alcohol, to thyroid disorders, to heart disease. What I'm trying to say is because it is so common, endometriosis, you can link it to almost anything. We need more research. I admire people like all the movements that since worldwide endometriosis march and endometriosis day, people like Claire, like Johnny, like others around the world that I see every day, they are interested, they are empowering, they are encouraging more research to find why women and young girls have endometriosis. It is not only a disease of the reproductive organ. It could affect your bowel, bladder, ureter, diaphragm, lungs, skin, you name it. So we need more research to see what is it. Well, of course, a good diet is good for everything. And a bad diet is a bad for everything. I have told all of my patients when they ask what diet, I tell them go ahead and look at Nejat.org. website, mm-hmm. And on that website at Nejat.org, we are recommending some good diet. That is what I recommend.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Doctor, for all the work that you're doing to help, you know, further the research on our illness. We appreciate it.
No, it has been an honor and privilege to take care of young girls and women with endometriosis over the years. We have had our own family members, our good friends, afflicted by this enigmatic disease, and hopefully now that there is a international movement on the disease, interest in the disease, we are very encouraged. Major medical organizations, we have to thank them that I know they are interested to name them. Is American Society of Reproductive Medicine, American College of OBGYN, Society of Laparoendoscopic Surgeons, Federation of International College of OBGYN, British Society, Royal College of OBGYN in England, ESHRE in Europe. These are all very AAGL, ASRM, and all these societies, American College of Surgeons, everybody now, and especially American Medical Association, again, people write Dr. Robert Waugh of American Medical Association, very, very good investigators that they are doing. They have been doing research with Dr. Linda Judice for the past 25 years when she was at Stanford. Now she is at University of California in San Francisco. And people like Dr. Sardar Bloom in Northwestern and many other centers. People like Hugh Taylor in Yale. There are a lot of interest in endometriosis, and I know sooner or later we are going to more and more progress. And we have to thank all of them. Progress happens when there is collaboration between different disciplines.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your answer, Dr. Kamran Nizat, and Joni, thanks for your questions. Dr. Nizat, thanks. I'll just read out the questions that has been sent out from Samantha. Samantha, one of your patients, she could not join the call due to some personal reasons. So she writes to me, is there anything as a parent that we can do to prevent young girls from getting endometriosis to begin with? And if not, how close are we to finding a vaccination, etc.?
Thank you for the question. It is very important that the name or the word endometriosis be on the radar of the parents with the young girls, because, you know, autism, about 500,000-600,000 people in this country have U.S. autism. Everybody knows what autism is, but a small number of people until 4 or 5 years ago, hardly even some medical professionals didn't know what endometriosis is. So we need more awareness to raise awareness. The parents, they should know if their young girls, if their young daughters, they get their period, and suddenly they have to miss a school every single month for 2 or 3 days. In college, they have to miss a school.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be evaluated. We need to raise more awareness among pediatricians about the parents, about endometriosis, teach them what it is. Then they take the young girls to the doctor, and the doctor could evaluate the patient and hopefully prevent the young girls losing their ovaries to large endometriosis cysts or their fertility potential.
Right. Thank you. Thank you for your answer. I hope Samantha must be listening to this conversation right now. The other question that she has is, how does the endometrial lining leave the uterus and attach to other organs, and is this genetic?
Again, the question is a good one. As I mentioned, we know endometriosis is multifactorial. Most genes might be affected in about 50% to the best of our knowledge right now, but we know it is not all genetic. For example, not all the daughters of a woman they are going to have endometriosis. It might skip a generation. It might not affect. But it could, the genes could have some factor. And it is not all the issue of retrograde menstruation. Incidentally, which is called Samson theory, even before Samson, 300 years before Samson, this was by another physician called Schroen. He had postulated. But endometriosis could be due to many factors. It could be genetic. It could be you are born with it. It could be, about as I said, around 50% of the time, it could be due to retrograde menstruation. It is multifactorial. We wrote a book called Endoscopy and Endometriosis cysts, endometriosis, ancient disease, ancient treatment. This was published by the very important Journal of Fertility and Sterility, and it is on my website. I recommend you go to Nejat, N-E-Z-H-A-T.org, www.nejat.org, and find history of endometriosis, endometriosis, ancient disease, ancient treatment, and you would be fascinated to see all the theories, including retrograde menstruation, including the genetic factors, how it has been a revolving door for years and years and years, thousands of years. And poor young girls and women have been accused of everything, including hysteria to this day. And as I mentioned, Freud was totally wrong. Freud brought the history of hysteric woman. That is not hysteria. A lot of these women and young girls that have endometriosis, they have been accused. They used to call it, again, it is in our papers, they used to call it angry uterus. That uterus is like an animal that travels all over the body and gets angry, and they used to hang women upside down, shake them, that the uterus goes back down to its normal position. So the history, there is so many theories about them. We don't know what is true, and hopefully we get to the bottom.
Okay, yeah. Well, thank you so much for enlightening about the history of endometriosis, and it is a frightening history that you just described. Now, my question, next question is, now that we are in this age of digital health, what is your opinion, Dr. Nizat, about mobile apps today, like the Fendo app that we have around, which is helping women track their endometriosis symptoms as they experience it daily? And this app has recorded like more than 600,000 data points so far. So do you think apps like these may be helpful in advancing endometriosis diagnosis and treatment in the future?
In my opinion, knowledge is power. And all the wearables, we call them, as long as it helps the patient, I support it. I believe knowledge is power, but I caution people, patients, that about, unfortunately, a lot of commercials, a lot of, unfortunately, wrong hands are getting involved because of the, with alternative motives. It has to be very vetted carefully to be evaluated to see what is the purpose, what is the motion. Anything that has commercial on it, I would be very cautious, including, the goal has to be to help young girls and women. But I don't have any technology, as long as it helps the patient, I have no problem with it. But it has to be vetted, it has to be evaluated to make sure.
Right.
I don't think it is fair for young women and girls to go and spend a lot of money unnecessarily to be abused or their data being abused. I caution people, you can see what happened recently with Facebook. I don't want people, but they have to be cautious of giving or sharing the information with people that they don't know.
Right, exactly. Thank you so much for that information. But yeah, there are a lot of free apps around, and Fendo app is a free app which allows women to track their symptoms as they are experiencing it in their daily life. So, okay, thank you for your answer, doctor. And with that, I will just go on to our audience question. We have got quite a lot of questions on our website, so I'll just read them one by one to you. I think most of it we have answered in your talk right now so far. So the first question says, I would be interested to know about superficial endo, as the doctors call it. I have read that the cells can appear to be clear color, which makes it difficult to see. Is this true, and what are the chances endo can get left behind because it's just not seen, for example, on the bowel?
Thank you again for your question, and very smart question. That is, I addressed it before. That is true. I mentioned to you that I have been training physicians from around the world for many, many years from the best institutions in the world, from the best establishment. And when they come to me, they don't know even what endometriosis is. That means their teachers don't know what endometriosis is. So that means we need better training to train. That is why we started a subspecialty called endometriosis subspecialty. This is the first one started by a Society of Laboratory Endoscopic Surgeons. We are very, very pleased to inform you again that American Society of Reproductive Medicine with Dr. Richard Reindahl has been very forward-looking in this, and they have started a fellowship again for the reproductive, for the medicine, reproductive surgery, for endometriosis. So these are true. We need better education to treat and to recognize what endometriosis is, as your questionnaire questions, the white, very superficial, clear lesions, some lesions that are totally atypical of endometriosis, and they can escape the best eyes, and you have to be, anything that is suspicious should be removed, sent to the pathologist. More, we need more and more training. I encourage you again, those of you who are listeners, you want to see some of this, go to the Nejad.org, also to the Nejad YouTube channel. They have some videotapes there. Also look to my publications in the Nejad.org. If you find my bio, in my bio there is more than several hundred articles. Each of them, you can look at them. Look at the videotapes. Should be very helpful. You can share it with your physicians, and they could benefit from it. Very good papers published in very good journals like Fertility and Sterility, a green journal called Obstetrics and Gynecology. We had a paper about endometriosis of the ureter in Nature Reviews last June, an excellent paper review about endometriosis of the bowel, and the American Journal of OBGYN, or called Gray Journal. And you can look at those papers. That would be very, very helpful for you. An update recently in the Journal of Society of Reproductive Surgeons. These are all online, and these are all free on my website. You can download it for your benefit. And these are all good peer-reviewed journals that could help you. You could help your doctors. Knowledge is power. If you are equipped with knowledge, you have to be very cautious. Unfortunately, there are a lot of unfair or improper advertisements on websites, because it is not necessarily everybody who says, I am an excision specialist. You have to be very cautious. You need to find a proper doctor. Somebody could go without any training, without expertise, to try. Unfortunately, we see many cases of patients that they have been damaged by people that they were not trained enough. They tried to excise the lesion. They got right into the bowel. They get right into the bladder or the blood vessels. It is not, it is the surgeon, the expertise.
Right.
It is not the instruments that is very, very important, that you find somebody who is experienced, expertise to help you.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your answer, doctor. The next question, the writer writes, what are the best treatments available for microsurgery? I was left undiagnosed with endometriosis for 33 years. And there is so much scar tissue that individual organs are not visible in ultrasound. I cannot risk a colostomy. How possible is it to have regular MRI scans for women with endometriosis so that we have understanding and control of our symptoms?
Again, thank you for your question. This brings me to the same, what I repeated, and I said, you have to be an educated consumer because there is no MRI. If the disease is very advanced, MRI or ultrasound might be able to show some of it if it is very advanced. It is on the uterus, you might see adenomyosis or endometriosis on the bowel or between the rectum or the vagina. But some of this, there are not any good imaging or any good test, non-invasive right now. That is the best recommendation is that you, again, we have written in Worldwide Endometriosis March website, in my website, nejad.org, in EndoMarch website, they have written some guidelines how to find a physician with expertise about endometriosis. Go to them, try to guide you, because again, there is no one size fits all. Read more. The more you read, the more educated you become, and hopefully you will find some help. And there are some help that we can.
Okay, so I have a couple more questions and then we will wrap up because we are almost at the end of the scheduled time. So the next question says, are you hopeful that we will one day, perhaps in the next few decades, find a cure or prevention for endo that will not require surgery?
That is the goal. Hopefully, the main, first we have to raise awareness. I encourage all of you who are listening to join movements like Worldwide Endometriosis March, Endometriosis Day, participate nicely, encouraging everybody to encourage more government fundings for your research institute, whatever it is, anywhere in the world, anywhere in the world, you know, to do more work to help, to find what is endometriosis, to find a non-invasive diagnostic test. Hopefully when we find that, hopefully we find a method to cure it better and a method to prevent it. Of course, now gradually progress happens and we are making, ultimately, in my opinion, when we find a good way to diagnose and treat endometriosis, we are on our way to diagnose and treat ovarian cancer also better, and we help all the women around the world. And this would happen. It would, you know, but we are on our way.
All right.
And
thank you
thank
for that
you
assurance,
for
Doctor.
Yes. I thank you very much, attention. So I think we are at the end of the day. Again, I encourage you to go to Worldwide EndoMarch website and register on the Worldwide EndoMarch website. You can look at nejad.org, and you can find information. And if we can be of help to you at any time, we would be honored to and a privilege. Thank you for including us, and thank you for helping women and young girls. Have a good night.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Dr. Nejad, for your time. And we really appreciate that you have such a busy schedule and you still found some time for us. Thank you so much. And Joni and Claire, thank you so much for your insightful questions. And I thank all the people out there who showed interest in this talk and posted their questions on the page. And I hope we were able to answer most of them. And our audience, I thank you for your support. And we look forward to have you join us for our upcoming Cure Talks on mind-body strategies to manage stress and decrease physical symptoms in May with Dr. Alice Domer. If you would like to propose a talk, or if you'd like to be on a fertility cure talk, please email me at shweta@trialx.com. And for more information on the upcoming talks, please visit www.curetalks.com. Thank you and have a nice day.
Thank you, Shweta.
Thank you.